Episode 24 of Between Two Wheels podcast, cycling analysis and commentary from Northern California. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show on any of the podcast platforms you use. Plus, you can like and follow us on Facebook at Between Two Wheels, that's the number two, Between Two Wheels podcast, where you can comment or simply just mock us in the open. This week's episode is sponsored by HealthIQ. HealthIQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like yourself. To learn more, get a free quote at healthiq.com/BTW. healthiq.com/BTW. Let me give you a roadmap for today's show as it's jam-packed. First up, Coach Nate Dunn, a data-driven athlete, has his coaching tip to help make sense of the data you may have up and running during your workout or ride. Then we start the show with some short commentary about the recent interview with Dave Kaus and his left turn project, followed immediately by the actual interview with Dave. But don't go away after the interview, because Kurt, Chris, and I stick around for more insightful commentary, analysis, and mind-blowing insights on Northern California cycling and the World Tour. Let's get to it. Nate Dunn.
Hi, this is Nate Dunn from Data Driven Athlete with a quick coaching tip. So sometimes riders feel uncertain about the best way to configure data on their cycling computer or head unit. And my advice is generally to take the time to create several different screens that match the purpose or the intent of the different types of rides that you're generally doing. So one example might be for an unstructured ride, you would create a screen that simply shows the time of day and how long you've been riding. And that way you're not distracted by a lot of different metrics during that ride and you're able to simply focus on enjoying the bike. So the opposite of that might be if you're heading out for an interval workout, you have a specific screen that you switch to that shows instant power, shows lap power, and shows lap duration. And that way you have the essentials to help you get the most high quality intervals done during that workout. But the most important thing is to make sure that you have different options on your cycling computer that help to support the ride objectives as opposed to always being distracted by a bunch of data that you might not be using. If you have any other questions about training related topics, you can head over to our website at datadrivenathlete.com and hit the search box on the upper right hand corner and type away.
Doesn't have to be perfect. Quoting Kurt Mills. Welcome again to another edition of the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is Tyler Yonke with Kurt Mills and Chris Flower. How are you gentlemen doing today?
Doing good, Tyler. Good to see you today.
You too. You're looking well. Stellar. You too, Chris. All right, Northern California, thanks for joining us. There's been some exciting developments going on. I just wanted to kind of talk to you about some things that happened. I was able to go and interview Dave Kaus in his new show, about his new show, The Left Turn. It's a YouTube channel / podcast. And so I saw some pictures online and it looked like it was quite the production. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, let's get together. Let's meet. I want to do a little interview. So I went and did that, and you'll be able to hear that coming up next on the podcast here. We'll insert the audio.
That's a crazy studio. Like how did he get that studio? Did you figure that out?
So I did, and you'll hear it in the interview. What was interesting to me was there was
I'll wait for the interview, I guess.
So what is the story behind the studio?
So yeah, this is a good question. So I went there and I was thinking, holy crap, they went big. They got a studio, they're putting money into this. And so you'll hear Dave talk about it, and it's actually someone's studio, it's someone's cameras. A lot of the stuff. So they're getting some help along the way. It's not like a big infusion of cash making this thing go. The studio itself is I'm not going to necessarily say where it is, but he mentions a guy. I think it's Cameron. It's in Sacramento.
Okay, it's a secret location.
I don't know. I wouldn't give permission to tag it and put the location.
They just put you in an Uber with a blindfold and you showed up there or what?
Yeah, it's like I was dating all over again. No, so
you've done worse.
Yeah, it's a guy Cameron, and he's an artist, and actually he's a Cat 1 or 2 cyclist. I think he rides for Mike's Bikes, Cat 3 maybe. I don't know. And he does artwork, and it's his whole studio. It's a former warehouse, and
oh, okay,
so he's
cool.
Got it's a small section of this warehouse that they have set up in there. It's pretty cool. So I went in there. My intent was to sit down and kind of do a long form interview like we've done with, you know, Willie, Andrew, Nate, and some of these people, and kind of just break into, you know, what they're doing, what's going on with Dave. And there's always questions. And but they were filming that night, so I kind of got a little derailed. So the interview got cut just a little bit. I didn't have time to do as much as I wanted to, but did a little overview and then stuck around, hung around for the filming. So that was cool to kind of see. And then he pulled me up to actually interview me. And so you can check that out on the Left Turn video itself.
So you're on the show.
I'm on the show.
Wow.
Yeah.
What sort impressive. Of flooring did they have in this warehouse?
It was just concrete. But I think in the studio, it might have been wood. I don't know.
Like a high quality laminate.
It could be.
Rolling doors or barn doors?
Huh?
Rolling up doors or barn doors?
There was some rolling. Okay. And then these are all important questions.
Well, it's important because Quickstep offers high quality laminates.
There you go. So you'll be able to find that out. Sure. on the interview about his connection.
It did look nice though. Like I was impressed with the backdrop and everything.
It's better than most
cool.
bike shops.
Yeah.
To me, it looked like a really high end bike shop.
Yeah. Well, when I first saw it, when he first released some pictures of it for this first episode, I was like, was this filmed in a bike shop? Because that's pretty, looked too elaborate to be his bedroom.
Did you do makeup?
Yes.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with the show.
Did they take some off or did they add some?
I looked kind of clownish, but yeah, no makeup. So that's a little harsh on the camera. My wife, she didn't mention that part, but I could tell she was a little wincing when she saw it. Because it has been published. It's out there.
So did you get a sense of what he's looking to get out of the show? Is he looking to use it as kind of a steering point for people to get involved in cycling? Is it just kind of a informative channel or what's kind of the vibe?
Yeah, so exactly what you're saying. If you go to his website, theleftturn.org, there you go, Dave. It actually, they're putting up a lot of content, like all the rides, trying to put the times out there, you know, when different rides are going. There was even talk behind the scenes of putting up road closures. I think that's, I don't know if someone's going to man that website, you know, on a daily basis. That's a little too much. But I think that's the idea. And it seems like to be a little bit more informative.
That's cool.
Not like us, where we just, you know, stream off at the mouth and pontificate and comment about stuff. So
like airport ride road closures.
Yeah, exactly.
Fender bender on the Garden Highway, guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Be careful.
Yeah. Stay out, watch the center line, those kind of things.
Sure.
Now, he's got the studio set up. Did you get a sense or did you talk to him at all? Is he going to do any like on location stuff, bring cameras out to a ride or try and get some live action type video?
I don't know. I'm sure that. So it was a gentleman, I think his name is Wayne, and it was his camera and info, and I don't know that he's going to be taking it out there, but I'm sure that's something that you can do. We don't have a lot of, and I mentioned this on the show, we don't have a lot of Northern California content, right? So that's kind of our thing, and that's obviously what he's kind of doing. And Dave, actually, you know, I asked him the questions there about his connection with Quickstep, which when I first met Dave, and I saw it, I thought, oh, this is someone that's just buying a kit, right? But there's actually a connection there, obviously, because he's got these guys, and it's served him well. I mean, he's going to be able to have some content that we can't have.
Sure.
And, I mean, no offense, Kurt. You're not Shackman.
I don't know who that Shackman is.
Yeah. You'll listen to the interview, and you'll find out about it. I'll
do that. Checking out their website. Looks pretty good. Yeah. Okay. Go on.
All right. So
you had more.
Well, so I just want to say thanks for Dave on that. And it was a good time. And so you can find out more about the situation, listen to the interview, and you'll be able to find out all you need to there. And I think they're posting it up. I think they have a Facebook page. It's on YouTube. So check it out. All right. Is there any other questions about?
No, I just think it's a good idea. It's like you said, we need more exposure, and it does anything to get more people out on the bike and out on the rides. I think that's more beneficial than not.
Well, like us. So we did one about last episode about cyclocross, and you know, we went out to the races and we're talking to people, our teammates, and I mean, we're not people like that. And I think that's kind of the whole aspect of get the local community involved, a place where they can go, and if they want to interact and have some more news about what they're doing, everyone likes that.
Sure.
You know, that's why we have Facebook. Everyone likes the dopamine hit when they get their face up on social media. So it's the same idea, and you know, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, Josh Young did really well at that cyclocross race, from what I hear.
Josh Young, there you go. All right, cycling fans, let's talk about preparation and doing your homework. In cycling, we seem to always be training and preparing for the next race. This could include diet, intervals, making sure that the bike is ready, and even studying the course profile and race route. If you take that much effort in preparing for your local bike race, are you doing the same homework and preparation in researching life insurance rates? Well, enter Health IQ. Health IQ is a life insurance agency and your best portal for saving money on life insurance. As a cyclist or active person, you could benefit from your lifestyle with savings and lower rates on life insurance. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for people just like you, including runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. Yes, even vegans. Think about it. Your healthy and your active lifestyle is a result of your health, and maybe it's the other way around, but either way, they work together. And the healthy person deserves special rates. It's like saving money by being a good driver. Health IQ gets you lower rates on health insurance with your health conscious lifestyle. How do they know you're a cyclist or runner or a vegan? Well, the first two can be accomplished by submitting race results, Strava data. The vegan one may require a little more in-depth conversation. But Between Two Wheels is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people get special life insurance rates. Go to www.healthiq.com/BTW. That's healthiq.com/BTW. The BTW is for Between Two Wheels. To support the show and learn more. Dave House, thanks for joining me today. I wanted to talk to you. First of all, because you've launched this new, I don't know if it's YouTube channel, website, and we're kind of looking to, hey, it's more Sacramento info, and as you're getting it out there. So I want to talk to you, kind of get an idea of what this whole thing is going to be and what your idea is on. So let's start there with what the name. First of all, what is the name?
Well, we originally were going to, we kind of went through a bunch of different names, but we came up with The Left Turn. And the reason being is you know, we're always going down the street. The right turn is easier than the left turn. The left turn, you always have to go across traffic. So we decided we're going to make the left turn because we want to kind of just take things into a different realm of cycling, both local and far.
So I was thinking maybe it had to do with the last turn on the river ride coming down to the finish. That was maybe what it was.
That actually is a great idea. I've never even thought about that. Well, I like that, though.
Well, take that for what you want. I remember first meeting you. Let's see if you even remember this. It was like 2004, 2005. I used to do a ride. I was fat coming back to cycling for a brief stint in Roseville. And I think you were out there. Does that ring a bell? Were you out there riding kind of with the Roseville group? Was that you?
Yeah, that was quite some time ago. But yeah, that was. I was out there riding with a group of guys in Roseville. If I remember correctly, that was out, I want to say Sierra College, that group out there.
Yeah, we would do a little. We started out by Waffle House or the Waffle Barn, sorry, yes. Right over there. And I forget the bike shop that was there now.
But it's a long time ago.
Long time ago. But I remember you riding up to me and saying, hey, where'd you get that kit? And I had my Oil Me stuff on. I'm like, just rode with him. So
yeah.
Anyway, so you've progressed from the Roseville. Now River Ride is a big deal with you,
yeah,
obviously. So yeah. What is your little bit of background on your riding from there?
So from Roseville, I mean, I started in 87, 86 as a kid in high school and grew up riding with a bunch of 7-Eleven guys and so forth. Transferred over to Europe for a few years, raced national team for a little bit. And I decided, I kind of want to just keep it amateur type. And so after I'd met you, I kind of got the feel for maybe I ought to try to get into start helping people out with cycling as far as places to go, looking for, you know, shops, maybe getting people's eyes on to Sacramento, why it's such a great place to ride a bicycle and why there's so much talent that comes out of here.
Yeah. And that's, I think that ties into what you're doing now. Let me ask you a quick question, and I do want to basically focus on the new channel and what you're doing here. But so you are tied in with Quick Step, the big World Tour team, most wins the season.
Correct.
Kittle, you know, yes. and Gaviria. Yeah. How is that connection? Because obviously there is a legitimate connection.
Yes.
You hang out with them at the Tour of California. You're helping them. You've gone over to Europe.
Yes.
How did that start, first of all?
So John McCone, a longtime resident of Sacramento, moved to Park City, Utah. He worked for a company called Vittoria International, and they did a shoe company called Northwave, yes, an Italian shoe company. I really like their shoes. They're awesome. But anyways, he was kind of sponsoring our little masters team that we had going. Previous to that, I have a good friend that works for Mohawk. His name is Richard Owen, and he's the vice president of Mohawk, which owns Quick Step. So one year, I believe it was, oh God, I can't remember. It was 2000, might have been 2007. Quickstep came over to do the tour of California, and John McCone called me and said, "Hey, you're supposed to meet up with this guy by the name of Kevin Holzmans, professional rider, rides with Quickstep. He says, I want you to take these guys out on some rides. They need somebody to show them the kind of area, because it's a week before tour where everybody comes. And Sacramento was the starting stage, the very first stage. And so I kind of got tied in with them, and I met a gentleman, the director, by the name of Wilford Peters, who is long time, amazing bike racer. So after that first connection, it just kind of stemmed off after that. And they said, "Hey, you want to come back next year and help us out?" And just kind of, it grew from that initial meeting and more trust after that. And so I've got a lot of responsibility now with them when they come to California. There's a lot of things that they have me do, and I really enjoy it because, one, I'm tied to the best team in the world, and two, it's like another family to me. Only when I go to Belgium, they treat me like family. So it's fantastic.
Yeah, that is pretty awesome. Okay, so let's get back into what you've got going here. How many people are associated with what you are doing?
So currently right now, myself, Christopher Mercer, Cameron Walker, which provides the studio for us, and he has some fantastic art if you ever have a chance to look at it online, Tim Collum Gallery, and then various different sponsors, EPNO, which is a legal substance, legal... what do you call it?
Supplement.
It helps you for recovery, and it helps kind of increase that nitric oxide in the blood, which is, you know, everybody needs, because it, you know, kind of helps you recover, et cetera. And then we have Sea Sucker Bike Racks, which, by the way, I love those guys. I've known them for a couple years now, and they sponsor Quickstep. And then Vi13, which is a clothing company, and they do a bunch of different clothing, and they are the ones that sponsor, God, all kinds of professional riders, but like 6 or 7 world champion track riders right now. So those are our sponsors.
On Sea Sucker, I saw you did some pretty funny commercials with Palace during, I think, was it the tour of California sometime last year.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about?
So the initial meeting with Sea Sucker was when I was with Quickstep. They had asked, "Hey, you know, we'd like to meet the director of Quickstep and talk about, you know, them maybe using our racks at some of these away races." And I said, "Great, I'll no problem providing the introduction." So I provided the introduction. This was the last day of Tour California. It kind of started then and moved forward to let's go to Belgium and develop a rack off of their cars. And then Chuck Casagrande, who is the owner of the company and the inventor of Sea Sucker, said, "Hey, let's do a couple commercials since you know Nielsen Palace from Action and we sponsor Action. Let's see if we can get him to come out to Florida." So we did a couple commercials with Sea Sucker out there, and they're going to continue on. We're going to continue using different riders, and I'll probably be the same person either driving the bus or talking or whatever, but they really like the aspect of, you know, these episodes going on and on and on. And I guess they were aired in Tour California and Tour de France and I think the World Championships, maybe Tour of Italy. I don't know. I heard multiple places from many people. So. Yeah,
that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to what we've got going here. So yeah. I think you've had, one episode released? Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, one.
Okay. And we're actually in your studio right now, and
yes,
you're going to be filming tonight as
yes,
well.
Yes, sir.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, I'm sorry, how many people did you say were involved?
So currently there's three of us right now. Myself, Chris Mercer, and Cameron Walker. And then, of course, Wayne, who is the director and one of the co-producers. It's his camera, his production company that is doing this for us because he really liked the idea. But the actual person that came up with the idea initially was Chris Bauman.
Okay. Chris Bauman, okay. I know him too.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So What is your kind of idea for the growth of this? And I mean, are you going to try to make some money off of this, or is it just like an entertainment thing? Because there's quite a few people here. So,
you know, I think initially we started off just kind of like an information, you know, something that people can go to for Sacramento and surrounding areas for information about cycling, you know, information about products that are around here, products that are out there that I use and other people use. You know, we're going to have guest people come on and talk about their thing. And I think it can really grow into something. I mean, this can really be a very, very cool, if you want to call it a podcast, if you want to call it a YouTube channel, if you want to call it a website. I mean, it may even develop into a small show. But I've had a lot of really good feedback, a lot of things that we can add to it that is going to boost it. But it's just basically your one-stop shop for anything and everything you want to know about cycling in the Sacramento Valley and surrounding areas.
So the online can be pretty... pretty harsh too. If you
of course. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And on you, you know, when you have opinions and you mm-hmm. post them either online or you're just that kind of person that, mm-hmm. that doesn't have a problem with doing it, you get some negative feedback.
Sure.
Have you been getting any of that?
I got one or two, and it was right after the first episode. And initially, it kind of struck me a little funny, but then I kind of sat back and I talked to somebody about it. I'm like, you know what? These people are actually providing suggestions yeah. in whatever way they do, and we just have to take it as, you add this to the show, we're just going to have one more watcher. So it's fantastic for us. We'll take anything and everything. You know, if people want to suggest, you know, if they want me to change my hair color, if they want me to change my shirt or whatever, it doesn't matter. We just, I love the feedback, regardless if it's negative or positive. I just want it to be nice and clean without profanity.
Yeah, so there you go, Northern California. Whatever you want Dave to do, he sounds like he will do it for you for the show.
There is limitations.
Well, okay, there's limits. And that's good. You know, we have, 20-some episodes in our podcast here, and, you know, I listen to same thing back, and I'm like, oh, God, you know. So there's obviously a learning process, and I applaud you for obviously doing this. Who are some guests that you think you're going to be having coming up, and kind of give us an overview of now the winter, right? The cycling pretty yeah. much is dwindling here. Yeah. So we've got cyclocross.
Yes.
So I understand that as well, you know, trying to come up with content.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to slight that's why I'm interviewing you. I'm right. just, hey, this is something exciting.
Yeah.
So what do you kind of have going for the winter and then the season itself?
So for the winter time, we're going to talk a lot about off-season training, you know, places you can go when it's raining outside. We're going to talk about off-season training as far as in the mountains, what you should be doing, you know, as far as like intensity and so forth. I'm going to have a couple coaches come on and talk about that. I'm going to have a massage therapist come on and talk about why it's so important to have massage. I'm also going to talk about actually time off the bike and what you should do, you know, maybe off the bike and enjoy yourself. Like maybe drink some really good beer from like Miraz Brewing Company, yeah. which whom I'm going to be having interviewed tonight. And
that's why I'm sticking around.
That's right. Of course. And then for the season wise, we're going to go into early season races, both amateur and professional. So we're going to talk about Tour Down Under, some new people that have gone to new places, teams as far as Nielsen Palace going to Lotto Jumbo versus Kittle going to Katusha, as far as Tom Boonen and what he's doing now that he's not racing bicycles, which is racing cars, and those sort of things. So I kind of just want to keep the viewers up to speed on changes in both World Tour and amateur, as also keeping them up to date on, you know, things that can, the happenings around Sacramento, like cyclocross races, both sanctioned and unsanctioned, you know, local group rides that people can go get some training in if they only have the weekend to do it because the daylight savings has now changed and it's dark at 5:30. We really just want to keep people interested and happy about cycling because it's a huge community.
Yeah, no, and that's good. So tell me about, I don't know much about your other, your co-host, Chris, mm-hmm. what's his name, Chris?
Christopher Mercer.
So what does he have to do with cycling other than,
so he's been around cycling for years, and he even started way before I did. He started the River Rides back in the day, South River Rides, when they first started. He would train really, I mean, he would train literally a lot with Leonard Harvey Nitz, who's a 3-time gold medal winner, you know, for the Olympics. So, I mean, there's people like that. He's got a lot of really history that's back before me. So he adds a lot of big element to that as well.
Yeah, in the Sacramento community, I mean, we are blessed here with the amount of rides we have. And where I grew up in the Northwest, and, you know, there was no one riding with me or take, you know, 3 hours to go do a race, you know, several times a year. You can do a handful of race rides a week in this valley. So that's pretty good.
It's fantastic, especially when daylight savings hits. I mean, yeah. we have at least four rides that I'm aware of. I mean, there may be more, but four that I'm aware of around the area that you can do, you know, three all week. It's awesome. It's yeah. fantastic.
Yeah. So back to your quick step ties, mm-hmm. what do you see them for this coming year? Because as you've mentioned, a few people are leaving the team, and, you know, they don't really, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. So you have a connection in there. They've now no longer have really a GC rider for the Grand
yes.
Tours. What do you think of that?
I think there's going to be some up-and-comers. I think you need to look for Julian Alaphilippe. He's yeah. a really strong rider. He's a young kid. Comes from a cyclocross background, and he had some knee surgery and some issues towards the end of the year, and he's recovered great. He's doing fantastic. But another guy you need to look out for as far as the sprinter side, since we've lost Kittle, is Fernando Gaviria. That man is super, super fast.
Yeah.
He is really fast. I think you'll see him at Tour California next year. Probably see Julian here as well. And then there's a couple other riders that I really can't say anything about until I'm allowed to say about, but there's a few new guys that are coming on that are going to add some punch to the classic scene.
Do you have any idea of who will be contesting for the Tour of California here from the Quick Step team? You
think I believe it will be Alaphilippe, and I believe Fernando Gaviria will be the sprinter. And the young kid that's coming to stay with me November 17th through December, first week of December, Maximilian Schachmann, young German kid. He's a GC rider and a really good time trialist. He'll be in the Sacramento area. I think he'll be coming to Tour of California, I imagine, because he did really well last year. And so if you come out to some of the local river rides and so forth, you'll actually get to meet a World Tour rider, Quick Step rider.
So River Ride Worlds. It looks like we have a contest. Let me ask you something else. So a few years ago, I think it was the San Francisco, Giro de San Francisco, you had a nasty wreck.
Yes, there, I did.
Which we've seen another friend of mine, Heinemann, had one, I think, last year, punctured a lung. Give me a breakdown of what happened and, you know, your recovery, because it seemed pretty horrific.
It took forever. So it was almost 4 years ago now. It was Giro de San Francisco, last lap of the Masters 35-plus race. I was in seventh position coming around the corner. I was going to take the outside line because it seemed like everybody was going inside, and a guy clipped a pedal, and his rear wheel shot up and hit my front wheel. I low-setted it, went down on my back, slid on my back with my head straight out, and I went directly into one of those super high curbs, which the result of that, I broke my C2 cervical vertebrae number 2. Luckily, I wasn't paralyzed, but I was in a halo for 3 months. Took a lot of time to recover, but believe it or not, I was on a spin bike 2 weeks after I got home, and I was trying to get back in shape and using a TENS unit and everything else just to try to keep some muscle mass with my legs. But a big learning lesson there for me that, you know, we all have day jobs now that we're not, you know, so heavily into cycling and looking at as to be a career. So, you know, just be safe out there and watch yourself. Did protect your front wheel.
Yeah, no kidding. Have you had any complications from that? I mean, it's...
No, I mean, wintertime I get a little, you know...
You feel when the weather comes in?
I stretch.
Yeah.
I stretch. Okay. I stretch my neck out. I do my exercises and I seem to be fine.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah. Hey, I really appreciate you taking a little bit of time for me.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Anytime.
Good luck with this venture, and appreciate it. Thanks.
Absolutely. And we're going to have you on the show to interview, so get ready.
Oh, Jesus. Thanks.
You're all welcome.
Let's just head right back into the world of cycling, and there's some developments taking place with, I saw here, Chris, Felt. Did you see... Jim Felt is no longer going to be with that company that has his name.
I saw that. Yeah, he stepped away, and I believe Rosengol has come in and purchased the company, so it'll get incorporated into whatever it is they're planning to do with it. It's hard to say if that's a great move or a bad move. I don't know. It's kind of a bummer because they are a California company, and they
Carlsbad is that?
I believe Irvine, maybe
Irvine, somewhere down
Southern
there.
California, somewhere. So yeah, it's, I think they're going to move the headquarters to somewhere else in Southern California and still kind of run their own show. But it'll be interesting to see how that develops, because I know that Felt has worked with a lot of cyclocross guys. I think it's Matthew Vanderpool or Wout van Aert. He's currently with Felt, and they were sponsoring his Conti team as well. So it'd be interesting to see if they maintain their presence there.
Do they have a team on the World Tour level or even the Continental level right now? Do you know?
Not on the World Tour level, no. But
they had Garmin, well, whatever that team, Slipstream, for a while back.
They did. And then they had Argo Shimano. They were riding Felt for a while before they became Giant Alpecin, whatever they are now, Giant Sunweb. They do, I believe, Holowesco Citadel. I believe they're currently on Felt bikes. Their American Conti level team.
Yeah. Okay. So we got.
So they do have a presence.
Do you know if they? What's kind of their? Do you know much about their marketing or who they're kind of pushing their bikes to? It seems like they have some speed bikes, some triathlon bikes, maybe, or.
They have a good strong triathlon presence. Outside of that, I'm not too sure.
Okay. Have you ridden a Felt before, Kurt?
No, I've never ridden a Felt.
You doing work over there? What are you?
I have a Felt time trial bike, and it's rather nice.
Do you really?
I do, really.
Is that your, I know you have like about 20 bikes. Is that your only time trial bike?
It is one of my 2 time trial bikes.
Okay. What's your other one?
It's an Argon.
Argon.
Yeah.
I had a Felt billiards table once.
A what?
A pool table. It was...
Oh, I don't think that's the...
It's from the same company, I believe.
Tote bag.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the pool table crafts. Had the Felt on the top.
Oh, it did.
But it was not a Felt brand.
Oh, no, I don't know about the...
Speaking of leaving... Jim Felt left, and now we just found out today Oath, who just came on, we thought were there the saviors for the Slipstream, Cannondale, Garmin team over the tour.
Drapac.
Now we found out that they are actually leaving the team as well. And Jonathan Vodgers has come out and said that this is actually not going to cause a problem with that. Were you able to look into that any more in depth to see that? Okay.
No, I just kind of just browsed the headline and that caught my eye. I assume that means Education First stepped in with a pretty sizable sponsorship if they're willing to, or if they're able to continue floating the team without Oath being involved.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And Oath, I'm trying to remember what that seemed like. They were some sort of conglomerate with like Huffington Post, right, and a bunch of different other things. So they came in and maybe they gave a little infusion of cash over the end of the season, but it's a little disappointing. The tenuous, which also reminds me. So there was a breakdown. I think Inner Ring website had done this whole thing about the reduction of teams.
Teams or team count?
Team count. I'm sorry. So I guess the UCI minimum is 23 teams. So you have to have 23 teams. I'm sorry, 23 riders on your team, right, UCI. And there were three teams as of now that were below the 23. So assuming that they're going to go at least up to 20, I think Dimension Data, I don't remember all three of them, but you assume that they're going to have those. And then he did a breakdown of all the teams, and you basically have lost about 30 riders aggregate of all the teams for the World Tour this year.
Yeah, I think last year a lot of teams were carrying 29 riders, and from what I've seen, a lot of the major teams are down to 24, 25 riders.
Well, so they lost on average, I think it was 1.3 riders per team. Hmm. So it's, and what made me think about this when you're seeing the sponsors leave is you are essentially losing a whole entire team out of the World Tour this year. Right. So while everyone's like, oh, I'm glad Education First, Drapac hasn't left and we keep the team, they've essentially lost an entire team through the Peloton.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
It does.
So they were actually on the verge of losing two teams this year, essentially, right, with the reduction in numbers plus the Drapac team.
Yeah, well, we talked about reducing the number of team riders and like Grand Tours and stuff maybe makes for more exciting racing, and you would think that would obviously make for less expensive cycling sponsorships as well. I mean,
right, a handful of riders less that you've got to pay a salary for.
Correct.
Yeah.
Will it make more exciting racing? I don't know. I'm not convinced.
Do you think it's good for the health of cycling to be losing these or thinning them out? Or because in one aspect, you're going, okay, it's like any sport. Let's say football. The more you keep expanding, you bring in, you know, now if someone's being able to get a job that never would have had a job in the NFL before, which means some of the quality is less.
A little diluted.
Yeah, a little diluted. I don't know that cycling has that problem right now of dilution, but what do you, I mean, there's the balance of the health and then there's the balance of the quality.
Right, and I think one of the challenges there also comes down to funding. If there's not enough funding, it doesn't matter how big you make the rider pool. If teams are constantly having to, you know, go to crowdfunding to stay relevant year after year, then obviously, there's a greater problem than quantity of riders on a team. I think it's probably not going to make a huge difference dropping from 29 to 25 in terms of the health of the sport. If anything, some of the Conti teams are going to get a little stronger, and it might make for more interesting racing on that level. At the same time, it might make some of those teams that get into the Grand Tours through exemptions or lottery or whatever be more likely to contend in races or in stages and kind of be the Cinderella story in those events as well.
Yeah,
I mean, if there's more teams, so you take a Grand Tour, for example, if you have more smaller teams, you have more sponsored leads or lead sponsors for teams, guys that are getting into breaks, who, when you call out their name, you're mentioning their sponsor. It seemed to me there's something to that. Because it's one thing to be a lead sponsor, and it's a totally another thing to be like the third sponsor on the jersey that doesn't really get mentioned, right?
Presented by...
Yeah. Yeah,
are they,
yeah.
Are they doing more teams? I think they're still doing the same number of teams, just fewer people in the peloton.
Right, but you just wonder if that might be the evolution of the sport.
Mm, right.
Yeah, I remember when I first got into cycling and was watching the tour, I think there was like 22 teams that they were, or more, 23. It was over 200 that would be in the Tour de France.
It was like 10-man teams.
Yeah, so it was crazy. And now I think it's capped at 178, I want to say, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, so you have a little bit less. And yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it. Yeah.
So with Oath leaving and you have this new Education First, they came up with their new kit. And did you happen to see that? I had trouble trying to see the... It was dim on what? So it's pink? Am I getting that right?
It looks like it's predominantly, you know, the shoulders are pink. There's some white across the chest. And then I think they still incorporate that, I don't know if you'd call it a lime green color, that Cannondale.
Dude, was there any argyle?
Last year? I couldn't tell. Yeah. But I imagine that it's got to be difficult to come out with a new kit for a team like that. So I don't know much about Education First. I don't know what their color scheme is. I don't know if pink is one of their predominant colors or if the kit is its own standalone thing separate from the company design.
Yeah. Speaking of, so Kurt, you're helping our team with kit design, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of a bad, I'm not a big fan of the Education First look, by the way.
That's good.
That's what our kit looks like.
That's what our kit looks like. What goes into the design and the production of a kit for
just
a team?
Just a lot of ribbing. you have to put your ego aside, be willing to just put your stuff out there, and then you have people disparage it.
Probably don't be too attached to your own design.
Yeah, definitely not. I don't know. I'm not a professional. I know some teams obviously go out and they hire professionals to do it, and that makes a lot of sense. But we don't have a big budget for that sort of stuff, so...
How's it been done in the past, our team, for instance?
In the past, we did actually hire, I think for the last two or three seasons, we hired someone. But we also used to collect sponsor fees. And we kind of decided last year to quit doing that just because it didn't make a lot of sense and it didn't feel like the right thing to do anymore. So with that change, we decided we did not have any money to pay a designer. The decision was made. So we're trying to figure it out.
What kind of help? Now we get through Castelli. So who helps with that as far as the company, Castelli himself? How much input do they have with the design and what kind of parameters and all that?
So with us, they don't have any input. We've gone to them in the past. In fact, the first few years we worked with Castelli to kind of go back and forth. And it takes a long time when you kind of give them an idea and for them to present it back to you. So we decided not to do that. In fact, we've worked with several designers. We've only really had success with one before. So it's just difficult because we procrastinate. We wait until the last minute to decide to get a jersey designed together. And then you've got this clock ticking until the first race is in January or the end of January, and you've got to get it done. So, you know, we don't always end up with the prettiest kit, but we end up with something to wear, usually by the middle of February.
Something to wear.
Right. Yeah. And I think one of the challenges is just coming up with the idea and then actually being proficient in the various programs to actually make something look presentable. And that's a skill set that I definitely lack, is being able to use any of those programs. So big kudos to you, Kurt, for being able to deal with our input and work through, I think you're using MS Paint.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm getting pretty good. The shortcuts,
draw.
Right?
Well, when I first was here in Sacramento trying to come back to racing, I joined the Real Strata team, and I went to a meeting, and I remember distinctly where everyone's trying to give their input on kit design, and Ron's basically like, "Nope, this is what's going to happen," and it seems a little, you know, strong to do that, but you have to. You can't be getting input from everybody on the team. So that's kind of what we've done in ours. I mean, it's streamlined it to a few.
Right.
I try to give a lot of good input, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Like that Hincappy jersey I keep sending you.
I think that's what we're going with.
Or that Cookie, Gaiman Cookie. Two of the worst jerseys. I'll post a picture online about those so we can have something to reference. But
you're the guy we come to for the worst jerseys.
Yeah.
That's your thing.
I don't know what I want. I just know what I don't want when I see it. Does that make sense?
Oil me. Yeah, no, I'm just joking.
So what was interesting about that, so the first year we started that team, we needed something designed quick. And so one of my teammates, he was kind of artistic, and he drafted something up.
Sure.
And I didn't like it, and not many people did, but we had to use it. And then they complain, right, after the fact. And that's kind of what I'm saying. Then they complain after the fact. Like,
yeah.
Well, you didn't give any input in the first place, and so why are you complaining afterwards? Because it doesn't look great. And... You know,
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're not a professional designer, the less is more. Like, don't try and do anything too crazy. And I think that's what we're hopefully going to do, is just not do too much. We've got a couple of sponsors that we'll put on the jersey, and that's, you know, we won't get crazy with it. So
yeah, when do you expect to have it done by?
Probably later tonight, to be honest with you.
Okay.
No, I mean, it could be within the next 2 days.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Sure. And it is always fun to try to get it. First few years to get our kit around Thanksgiving, right?
We were pretty on it for the first couple of years.
Yeah.
So
anything out there that you've seen in Northern California that you really like that's not our kit? Any of the other teams that you've enjoyed?
Yeah, I mean, Mike's Bikes always does a great job. I think their kits look great. I'm not sure who does theirs, but they always look real professional. Besides that, the cyclocross team that Scott Hooper rides for, is that DNA? Who is the?
I think they're the folks that actually make the kits, but I think it's Top Club Cyclocross.
Top Club or something now.
Top Club. I think their kits look really sharp.
Yeah.
In the coaching company he worked for before, or that he works with, McGovern Cycling had some really slick kits for a few years. So I guess it was Real Wheels was the name of the brand. Yeah. That was his bike shop.
Right.
You're right. Every time I've seen those kits, different modifications from year to year, they still enjoy them, right?
Yeah. Is there some that you like, or?
Once again, there's more along the line ones that I don't like.
There's some that you don't like?
Yeah, and I'm not going to call those out. So, like I said, I don't have an eye for that, but I see something and I'm like, oh, I definitely don't like that.
Right. Cycle Folsom has they haven't changed their kit for like 10 years.
Did you not get the opportunity to vote on their new kits for next year? You should dig into your email.
I will look, but I'm trying to think like locally, who has cool, like good kits?
So not so much locally, but I'm not a big fan of the color red, but I always thought the Muscle Milk kit came out really well.
Okay, yeah.
I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
It's got a good flow to it.
Sure. Actually, the Audi Reno team always looks professional, like looks clean. I like theirs.
Yeah, good call. Good call. Anyone from the Bay Area that you...
I think Muscle Milk's from the Bay Area.
Okay.
Well. Yeah, that was the shot there. But then there's all those like smaller brands that are doing their stuff with like Velocio and
it's always interesting to see kind of the trends that go. Like you mentioned Oil Me. We were, back in the day, we decided to go blue, everything. And at the time, no one was really doing... They were all black shorts, and we went blue shorts. And next thing you know, now everyone's doing... So I'm hoping we can start a trend here and go all white shorts.
You always say that. I don't know what the trick. What happens if you go all white?
I don't know. It just seems like a horrible decision to go all white.
I think that's what we're getting your kid at.
Oh, like a national jersey or something?
Yes.
Right.
I like it.
You got some KOM, right? We'll call it like, well, the PWS like KOM or something. I don't know.
Okay, so Northern California, they just came out with their schedule, the new race schedule, and it would be we want to do a breakdown of that someday. But Chris, I know you mentioned it today. Is there anything about it that you
I think the big changes that jumped out at me is the big stage race that a lot of people target, that's normally in mid to early February, which is the Chico stage race, has been pushed back till I think late March.
Okay.
Which I think
was a rumor that we thought that was going to happen.
Yeah. I think it gives a little bit more flexibility with weather. Weather is usually hit or miss on that race. So hopefully pushing it out a month and a half kind of moves us away from the wet weather. Fingers crossed on that, because it's a fun race for some.
It's a cool event. It used to be that the Merco stage race, I'm trying to remember, that was like roughly the same time of year that they've just moved Chico stage race to.
It was like late March, early April.
Yeah, and that was a primer for some teams kind of going into San Dimas and
Redlands.
But I'm not sure if that was the thought there. I think you said no, potentially, but...
I just said that to say it.
Well, you said Joe Martin stage race was roughly the same time frame, but...
Are you doing really Joe Martin? Fact check that at all. Well, I plan to, yeah.
Well, the other thing, that's quite a trip. Like, if you've got a team out here already, like, and they're planning on going to those, you might save a little money.
I think it makes sense to do, like, I don't know, California swing, so to speak. Do a Central Valley kind of mid-level stage race, and then jump out to Redlands.
For sure.
When does Gila hit the calendar?
I don't remember. It seems like earlier part of the year. is that there is Omnium, right, with Mount Hamilton involved?
So that's
are they
that's
trying to expand that more this year?
Well, it's the Memorial Day stage race.
Okay.
It looks like they've got, I kind of glanced at that briefly today, they've got a circuit race on Saturday, road race on Sunday, and maybe a time trial and crit on the following Monday. Looks like that's on the calendar.
My only problem with that is, well, it's going to be very selective for Mount Hamilton, obviously.
Right.
And which is, you know, you think of Chico, we're talking about that. That you've got all these races and everyone, you know, you could finish top 50 in the road race and still be right in it. And then there's a time trial that, you know, you get, I have no chance in, as an
That's
example.
That's not true.
So the time trial, right? The time trial seems to be the only part that really differentiates most of the riders.
Right.
So, well, and then you have this one, it's the climbing that differentiates him. So I guess that's kind of cool. But I need something in the middle between a time trial and a run.
Climb. Like
something that differentiates me from everyone else.
Oh, okay. Maybe bonus points for preams, bonus seconds. Get your bonus minutes or something.
Kurt, do you have a suggestion for what we
can? No, I was just trying to think of the way you train, and then it's like, I don't know. Like 15
10 minutes.
Yeah. I don't know. Like,
I think last year they opened up with a 5 to 8 minute hill climb, and that might be up your alley. So
yeah, someone was talking about a race. Oh, the Baker City stage race,
right, yeah.
That might have like I would enjoy about a 1 mile uphill.
No, it was like time a 3 mile, 8%.
Well, I would like a 1 mile.
Okay. You can stop like part of the way and just.
Someone
call it
said
good.
A 1 mile. Who was that?
A little bit of sight work.
I want to do the race. Yeah.
Make that however you want.
3 miles is a little bit, but uphill I could at least do a little better. It's easier for me to keep the power on, not necessarily be competitive.
I find the same thing. If the shorter it is, the easier it is for me to keep the power on.
Yeah.
Like, well, no, I mean uphill.
That's the same. does that change it?
No, not
so
necessarily.
On the schedule, just one of the things that is always a standout for the NCNCA schedule is that the first race is January 1, and there's pretty much a race or multiple races every weekend until late September. It's if you want a race, you can just kind of pick and choose any weekend, and there's bound to be something going on.
Yeah, I want to look at this more. I did a breakdown a few years ago of like all the how many races and how many races per month. So I'll have to kind of look at that again to see if there's, you know, some months are more than others. And were there any overlapping conflicts that you saw?
There's a few. There's always a few. A race that I've done once and did really poorly at was the Tour d'Ainé. That looks like it's not going to be its own race on a weekend. It's sharing a race day with a crit in the Bay Area. So that's probably going to split some of the fields up, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I think... I'd have to look closely, but I don't think the Auburn crit has its own day either.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to double check that.
That's disappointing.
Yeah. And then the Folsom crit, which is their summer classic, it falls on the same weekend as that stage race we had mentioned. So if they run it as a true stage race, it'll potentially pull some racers away from that. I think last year they did it as an Omnium, and people were able to do both.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure what the format's going to be. It's...
So
too early to tell.
The summer one, is that the Sierra Nevada sponsored?
Yeah, it's Memorial Day weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's disappointing to have. I mean, that one's close by, but it would, I don't know. I don't like the big conflicts like that, especially races you can do two of, you know, you're stretching out.
Right.
I'm avoiding the conflict. The Auburn race, though, that does fall on the same weekend as Winchester, which is, I think, a really good alignment for that whole event. So if people are coming up for that weekend, you get two really good races that suit sort of similar racers, kind of power climbers type deal. That'll be cool.
I would encourage attendance for both. I think I did both of those last year and not being in great shape at the time. And just simply to make sure that my support was there and that they were taking my money for something.
Right.
So, you know, I wanted to continue the next year. Maybe I'm like, hey, I have a whole year to get in shape.
That's not, it never works that way, but yeah.
Now I'm a little behind right now.
Yeah, it's mid-April for Winchester and Auburn, same weekend. It looks like Auburn does share a day with the Budweiser Sequoia Classic, so geographically they're far enough apart
different.
Where they're going to pull different racers altogether anyway.
Completely different racers, yeah. It seemed like last time at the Sequoia you had an incident in the parking lot with...
I think it was 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah. That's right. Last year didn't... I don't even know. Did it take place last year?
It did take place. It just... I don't think the field was as strong.
Because I got some Southern California crit guys up there banging elbows and stuff for that one. So our friend Matt Chat won the pro race.
Which and he got a guitar.
Got a guitar. And
can he play a guitar?
Maybe now he can.
Ooh. A couple of years later?
Yeah.
Sure.
Did either one of you see the Northern California NCNCA awards?
I saw some pictures, but I didn't. I don't know what the categories were. I
saw pictures as well, and that's about as good. If anybody out there can send us the actual awards for each category and what they were, we'll mention them. So there's some homework for you guys. Because it would be nice to give a shout out to some of the riders. I saw Josh Carling won something.
Well, I think Williams, the Williams team won the point series.
Okay.
Josh Carling won a broken collarbone at the Esparto TT, I think.
Yes. I don't know if you call that winning it, but he definitely got, you know, I talked to him about that when his first rides back. I happened to be on a ride with him, and he said that he hit a pothole. Sure. And he said he hit it so hard and warming up on his time trial bike that he actually hit the handlebars with his shoulder, and he thinks that's what broke it rather than him hitting the ground. That's some force.
Wow. Yeah, that's a, geez. That's a theory.
He might, I don't know that he passed out, so it might be the right one.
Sure. Yeah, I wasn't there. Chris was there. Chris, you got any thoughts on that?
I may have been on the course at the time, okay, or warming up in my own area, so I didn't see it happen.
But as an expert in warm-up broken collarbones.
I've never broken a collarbone. Dislocated a shoulder.
Oh, my fault.
I think they're completely different injuries.
Yeah, okay.
So we're solidifying our team roster for 2018. It's been a hectic contract season for us.
Oh man,
it's transfer season.
Well, have you signed your contract yet?
There's a hang up there. I haven't actually seen it come to my agent yet. So
Chris has got a 4-year term.
You have an agent?
I do. Didn't you not get my fees?
No.
What am I paying you for?
Oh, hey. I hope to sit down with some other teams, one of us, maybe all of us, sit down with some different people and talk to them about their team rosters, kind of what they have going on next year. Little rumor, we're going to throw this out there. We're looking at the cross results last week, and Jonathan Baker said Touchstone, not Chico Racing. Is that just his cyclocross? Is he going to a different team for road?
Who's Jonathan Baker?
Okay, no. Well, once we get past that.
No, I'm not a cyclocross guy, but... yeah, that'd be a big deal, I guess. Who's
Touchstone? Is that, you think that's the Specialized Touchstone team?
I guess. I don't know. I think they lost Specialized as a sponsor, right? Oh. So they must just
be news.
Touchstone. Oh. Let's just start rumors. Sure.
Yeah. Well, we got Oath.
We got
that's
Oath?
What, that makes sense why they left Education First. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that'd be a heck of a fit for that team, because that's another great Masters racer that would help them challenge Pete's, I would imagine, in some of those fields.
Yeah. If anybody, you know, we'll be out and reaching out to you guys and get some rosters from, maybe talk to some different teams and kind of see what they have going on. And we'll solidify ours. It'll be out there. You know, whoever's looking for what DDA is going to be doing in the 2018 season.
I think we have coming the same team, right? We have,
come the same.
There are no changes.
I picked up some solid 35 plus guys, more so because they got older.
Okay.
I think that counts as a pickup, right?
Right.
Yeah. It sure helps us. It's more fun, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of helping us, anybody working on their winter diet?
I'm working on Halloween candy. That's my fuel right now. And it's going great.
So this really isn't a podcast. This is an intervention, Chris.
Another one. Two in 1 week.
Well, the other
all
one
around
was,
Halloween candy.
The other one was for our buddy. Hey, Jason, how you doing? How's the diet coming, Jason?
Did you stop by for a double meal by any chance?
It's called a bang bang.
Oh, okay.
I sat next to Jason for a reason.
Did you pick off his plate?
No. There was no time to pick off his plate. I've been working on this winter diet for about 2 years now. So
what do you got figured out?
As you get older, it gets tougher to lose weight.
Yes,
that's
it does.
That's what I've noticed. But no, I'm not serious enough to focus on that just yet. I'll worry about that about a week before Land Park. probably just stop eating for
but then,
3 days.
Then you're like, oh, it's a flat race. I need more power. Yeah. So I'll just.
It's like you're in my head.
Yeah. Oh, and it's cold. Right. I need more cushion. You know,
need that insulation.
Insulation. Yeah.
Well, what's your secret, Tyler? You always seem like you keep the pounds off.
Well, like you guys, you know, the older you get, the more difficult it is. And so I never had had this problem before. And then I stopped riding the bike at one point, and you just keep eating like you normally did. And there was a big problem. So what I ended up doing was, one, I got married to someone who's really good with their cooking. Healthy wise.
Yeah.
And then two is I started using this app called Lose It, and they're not a sponsor or anything. I just throwing it out there.
Right.
Lose It. And it basically was logging all my caloric intake, everything. And once you start doing that, you realize, oh, look at that little muffin, you know, 200 calories, or simple thing like Chipotle, right? You get one of their tortillas. It's like 300-400 calories or something like that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And you go, oh, and that's my bike ride for the day.
Right.
Unless it's the weekend, I'm doing, you know, 45 minutes an hour, and that's 400 or 500 calories. So once I did that, and then I really went into high school girl eating disorder mode and just went to bed hungry.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, you really were going nuts.
For so you find that you eat less, or you just make smarter food choices?
So I both, okay. and at different times, right? So it'd be like, I'm riding to, so the app too, you can incorporate it with Strava as an example, and it'll show how many calories, you know, you burned that day for your workout, which means you can eat a little bit more. So you can have a periodization, everything on a micro basis. So I worked out, I could eat a little bit more, and you know, cause you can set your parameters of how many calories you want to eat that day for your, it gives you your weight loss type of idea.
So that's a great theory. Now, in practice, do you find that you kind of apply that practice early on in the off season and kind of taper toward a good race weight, or do you procrastinate and when December 20th rolls around, you start trying to cram kind of weight loss in?
Well, so the first year I did it, I was losing a lot of weight over the winter. That's when I started to do it, and I was really consistent with it. Yeah. And I've actually been using the same app for about 2 years now. And then last year, I kind of took some time off from using it. And basically, I was going down a rabbit hole of burgers and fries and stuff. But when I use it in a consistent, I'll try to do it all year. Because as we've talked about, I don't do a lot of training. So therefore, for me to take a winter off is just putting yourself, you know, I don't want to come into the season like 10, 15 pounds overweight. It takes forever until it gets hot for me to sweat it out. So I got to try to be consistent.
Yeah,
I don't know. The gluten, I also, you know, I know, Chris, you're gluten-free, but that was kind of actually what I did was I went off of that just simply for, because it's where, for me, that was my problem was, you know, baked goods and those kind of things. And so when you delete those from your diet, instead of just going to the gluten-free option, you just don't have those perhaps.
Maybe. Oh, you do.
I know you do, but I'm saying I didn't.
Oh, okay.
And then you're just... instead of, you know, having some toast, you're maybe having, you know, some celery or I don't know, something else. You can can fit those things in there, and it helps. And
works.
Definitely something to work on. That's my plan anyway.
Lose it.
Yeah, or any of those apps out there, they have those things. So speaking of health, we've been approached by a company to sponsor this podcast. I'm not going to say who it is, but it's a health company. And so what that really means for, what does it mean for the listener? Well, it means that you just need to share this show, like it, get it out there so we have more downloads so that when we do sponsor, we get more for it. And what do we get out of that sponsorship? Well, we're going to try to go to Trinidad and Tobago.
Sure.
And do some vacationing. And we'll report from the cycling events that we have going on there.
You can upgrade your bike frame one of these days. that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Fund a new rear derailleur.
I did get a new rear derailleur.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. All right. It's all in the books. Do you guys have anything else going on?
Not at the moment. I just need to resume training. I kind of decided
we resumed training last night, I thought.
That was day one, yeah.
Yeah, so we're back at it.
You did this night ride. I know the Cycle Folsom does like a night ride, and then you guys were riding out there in the dark as well. Is it start and finish all in the dark? Is that what it is?
Yeah, and it's night rides. They do a lot of rides throughout the week.
Glow sticks on your bike? Or?
They've got lights now. It's a crazy thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun, actually. So that's, I think once a week I've made a commitment. I'm going to try and do... a night ride here, and if Chris joins me in this oath,
I'll be there.
Okay, cool. It'll make it a little bit easier. Otherwise, who wants to go out and do that, you know?
Well, it's getting cold too.
It was cold last night. The one thing that's great about the ride is they do a really good job of mixing a whole different range of skill sets and physical ability, and having everybody get something out of the ride.
Right.
So it's really good. Well, I got absolutely worked over.
How did they do that?
They just split us up.
They just make you ride in the front the whole time?
Yeah. Go to the front and pull. Go.
I got a lot out of the ride just by riding on Chris's wheel. And Chris got worked over by just riding on the front the whole time.
Self-induced.
Not the
pain.
Smartest guy, but yeah.
I got a lot of TSS, though, so that's what I care about.
That's the canal out there in Rancho area. That's kind of the ride that you got started on, isn't that right?
That was one of my first group rides, yeah. And it's kind of funny. We were talking about that last night on our kind of cool down from the ride is, you know, one of my first experiences out there is just going out way too hard and blowing up and then just getting dropped and just progressively coming back out each time and trying to stick in with the group a little bit longer each time and learning the nuances of when to not take a pull, when to sit in, when to pull, when to rotate off. And it's a good place to learn just because it's closed to traffic and it's open road.
Yeah, I haven't done this ride for like a number of years now. It's actually pretty amazing to watch. Like from yesterday throughout the rest of the winter, you'll see guys who are just starting cycling get a lot stronger. Actually, I think I may have even seen Chris back in the day kind of go through that progression. But it happens. And every group ride you go to, I think we've all started where that's sort of the thing is you try and get from, you know, this point to this point, and then next week it's this point to this point. But it's cool. It's and that community and that group, particularly in the city, have done a really good job at fostering, like Chris said, all different levels of cyclists to have some place to go and ride with people. And in the winter when it's dark, it's a heck of a lot easier to get out there than it is alone. So it's cool.
I agree.
That concept of trying to last on the race, the ride as long as you can, and getting a little further and a little further. That's a great way to try to progress yourself and to, you know, burn out, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a bunch of little kind of milestone points along the route that you can keep track of. Am I with the group on the first roller? Okay. Next week, I'll try and get to the second roller or the third roller or this bend on the overpass or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
So there's a perfect segue to finish this podcast here. And 'cause we talked about it at the start, the left turn, Dave's, if you go to his website, it actually has a list of all these bunch of group rides in the Sacramento area. You go there. I don't think the canal ride's on there. Maybe you need to give
that's weird. The A-list of rides. Because that's
a well-kept secret.
Right above that. There's another one that they promote a lot, the South River ride. But the canal ride, for my money, it's probably a little tougher.
I would agree.
Plus, they do it the canal ride stops in the dark and the South River ride stops in the dark and the canal ride actually starts going. So it's the hard man's race ride. So.
Willie Myers would disagree. He said the South River ride is the toughest one in the area.
He hasn't done the canal ride, so that's important to note.
Because nothing's more difficult than scraping yourself off that fence at 30 miles an hour.
And you have to be alert take you to when you're out there.
Have someone take you to the hospital. See you do that one on the South River ride.
That is true. Like, yeah, there's literally a fence you could get ridden into the entire length of the ride. So,
fence on one side, ditch on the other. It's got its hazards.
Didn't you find someone out there? One of your friends was like kind of walking around delirious, wrecked out there a few years ago.
Yeah, I was out there on this. I think it was this ride, and a guy who was out there alone had been riding, and it's one of those places because no one goes out there unless this organized ride goes out there.
Say who it was?
Yeah, it was Frank Lunceford.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he was out there training. Doing its own thing, hit the fence, and I think he ended up with a broken hip, maybe like some broken ribs and so forth. But he was out there, and it was cold. It was a really cold night, and it was lucky we kind of came across him. But there's been several people that are on our team that have hit that fence before and ruined themselves. So yeah, it's a little bit hazardous.
How are you doing, John?
John would be one.
What do you do for? Okay, I have like a road ID. I have my phone in my pocket. Sometimes I'll take my driver's license, put it in as well. What do you take with you, or do you have something with you? I mean, I guess for your friend Frank, I mean, when he's out there, you smash down. What are you going to do to protect yourself or have someone notified of where you are?
Right. That was one of the interesting things. So Frank had hit his head pretty good, and even though he had his phone with him, wasn't thinking of placing a phone call, So, you know, if you hit yourself, you hit your head hard enough, you maybe not thinking straight. I carry my phone. I don't have, I have a road ID. I don't carry it with me, but yeah, everybody should probably think about that. I know there's some technology built into Strava in particular that allows you to set up an emergency notifier or at least let people follow you while you're riding. And there's probably other services. I'm sure Road ID is thinking of doing something similar. So
it seems like Lucas user a few years ago, he had some whole concept. It was one of these things you attach to your helmet, and if you go down and certain impact, it would send out a like a beacon type of thing. I've fallen, I can't get up.
Right. Probably paired with your phone, I would assume.
Yeah, I don't know. But I don't know. I haven't seen much more about that. So
it's a good idea, though. It'd be handy if you're out riding in the dark by yourself.
Yeah, so be careful out there.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks, Kurt.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.